the end of the last recording, I said, and the last recording was the place of the north, I said, so here I sit with the Chinupa, giving thanks to the south. I thought I had meant to say giving thanks to the north. But when you're sitting in the north, you are looking to the south, which is the place of the child. And it is said that the road between the north and the south is the red road. And that the road between east and west is the road of difficulty. Now sitting down at the beach, as Ernest Hemingway says, the sun also rises. The sun is now up. And in the distance I can hear, you can hear this now, a plane. And when I come down to this beach in the morning, early, already I can hear the hum of the cars. I live on an island, a smallish island, but it's still, you know, the buzz of the day is beginning. All the different sounds of life beginning to interact with itself. And it very much reminds me of the place of the East. What I found sitting in the East, literally you're sitting in the door, because the door of this lodge faces east, as most lodges do. Not all, but many. And so it's the way we built this lodge, it also sort of the narrowest part of the lodge. And my back is literally to the fire. I'm sitting in the line of fire. I'm sitting right in it. When we sit in the west, we are also sitting in the fire. The west is probably the most challenging place to sit in a lodge. We call it the hot seat. And so here's this, I'm in this road, I'm right on the road here, the path of most difficulty, the path that runs east-west. And when we sit in the east, it's often like, something needs to be pushed out. Something is like a pustule, or a pimple, kind of a pussy thing that is rising and growing and will eventually, pop. As I said before, the seed is ready to pop. So here I am in the east, incubating the seed. You know, the heat of the east, the place of sitting in the fire. And it's an awkward place, and I'm praying in the east here for Creator to give me strength. I'm feeling very sweaty and sticky and stinky. I'm in my third day now. The sounds of the birds and the gurgles that are coming from my belly from not having eaten for 2 days seem to be talking to one another. But it is the fasting that keeps me alert. They say that when we fast, we become closer to Creator. And as I sit in the east, the question comes to me, do I love? And I realize I am not yet able to love. I don't know what it means to love. And I require some knowledge to learn how to love. Some love grows like weeds, as the love for our children. Other kinds of love is like grafting trees. You have to know how. You have to know how to cultivate love, just like awareness. Love is, and it requires care, and also some know-how. And so I sit with the word caring for a while, and all of a sudden I am being asked, what do you need? What do you need? Need and help are such delicate words. And what comes through is help where needed and where you can. And this can be a very tricky place, this kind of tight spot of the East. Help where needed. That's a real mouthful. It's said that everything we do in life is to prepare us to die happy. We are working for our future ancestors, those who will come 300 years after us, just as they did for us. It is like some of the native cultures, they would prepare a tree, a cedar tree, or any tree to be a canoe for the future by stripping the bark off it. They were thinking 300 years in advance, so if you keep stripping the bark off the tree, it will start to hollow itself out. So in 300 years, our future ancestors will be able to just come and take that tree ceremonially, and it will be a canoe. And this place of the East is kind of like a wormhole. And that movie Interstellar really brought this home, that crossing point. There's a word for it I just found out recently. It's just not coming to me right now. But it is like the cross. When you look at the cross as a two-dimensional thing and the four directions, you know, it's two lines intersecting. But when you kind of take the lid off it and look down inside of it, you can see the parallel realities. Today, one of my helpers, who is going to be spending a lot of time here today, taking many shifts, is my partner, and he's the only male of the group. I was told only to have females, but it just kind of came up that he would also be assisting. And he arrived a little bit from a place of fear. I'm in my third day, and he's concerned for me. And he showed up, and he announced, "I'm here to help you today. I'm here to give you whatever you need." And then he went about like an elephant, tromping around, and kind of, I could hear him moving the wood around, and, you know, pronouncing he was here to help me. And I'm sure in many ways... Oh, a dog just walked up behind me, knocked a spoon off a log. A dog I've never seen before. In many ways, he helps me, but it sometimes, I think we both sit in the East a lot, and we really squeeze each other. I was watching a documentary a while ago about Tibet, and it was from the perspective of a Tibetan monk, and he said there was much goodness in the Chinese invading Tibet. Although they destroyed many of our temples and made many people were suffering, there was much suffering. It was necessary. It was needed. Fish just jumped out of the ocean as I said that. It was needed so that the teachings of the Tibetans, the ways of the Tibetans, would be spread out into the world. And he also used the analogy of a pustule of pushing the, you know, that which is gestating out into the world. So the invasion by the Chinese of Tibet pushed the Dalai Lama himself out of his seat and into the world. So what I'm noticing in the east is it's a place of high sensitivity. And so when we spend a lot of time in the east, our spiritual seeking, we do become highly sensitized. Every sound, movement, energy is very much heightened here in the east. It feels like I can hear everything 100 times louder. And as I said, the person who's caring for me today, a lot of their caring may be perhaps due to their concern or fear. And when we offer caring in that way, we become like vampires. And we begin to feed on that caring, and it becomes a little bit convoluted. You know, it's said that there are people who are like vampires, and what is happening is that their chakras are set up differently, and their chakras leak energy. And so these people are simply not able to assimilate their energy as it comes to them, and must continuously feed on others. And as I was said, I was told by my elder only to have female attendants. And I took a chance, a risk, I suppose, having a man be one of my attendants, particularly one that I'm intimate with. Men do not naturally know how to nurture. They are babies themselves, constantly needing care and attention. And so it is fortunate that women are endowed with nurturing, just like the mother. Nurturing comes naturally to women. When we support a visions faster or a sun dancer, we cannot take, because that person needs all of our care and support. Sometimes we think we are giving, you know, being in service, but actually we are taking. We cannot come to somebody who is in sacrifice with an agenda to do for them. All we can do is be. So this went on for quite a while. This supporter showing me, because of his actions, I was able to see. Because of mistakes, we are able to see. Mistakes are a great opening, like an apocalypse. Apocalypse just means an opening in the liptych. Apo means opening, an opening in the cycle. And it is also said that the basket weaver always leaves a mistake in their craft. It's a way out of ourselves. It's a way out of whatever we get ourselves caught up in. So I felt very fortunate that one point when that supporter, that male supporter left, and one of the females came and she began to sing to me, or just to sing as she was sitting by the fire, and it soothed me greatly, as did the grandfathers when they came in, always feeding me. And I realized that this woman who was singing to me also, she's very good at caring for others, but not so good at caring for herself. That she must remember, too, to care for herself and ask for help when needed. And even some women need more nurturing. One of the other helpers here, she's a mother of a young child. And she sometimes requires more nurturing than she is able to give. And this is the weak link between her and her son. It's also possible that she gives her son so much nurturing, and then he goes and sees his father. They are parted. And the father, who also, of course, needs nurturing, kind of sucks it out of him. And so he, the boy, comes back to his mother empty. And she must fill him again. But she too needs to be filled. And so this is what we do for each other as sisters and with our moon. We can take the pain from one another or just help it move through more gracefully. So here I sit in the east and I'm very sensitive, yet I feel no physical pain. That has been drained in the west. So although I am uncomfortable and I feel really squeezed and in a tight place here in the east, very little physical pain is here. And I begin to focus back on the soul navigation, which is a very, very big part of my work in general, and the rites of soul navigation. And here in front of me are coming three Canada geese. They're about 10 feet away from me right now. A little visit from the north, I guess, to help quiet and clear my mind before I go into this next portion. Because this is a very delicate thing I'm about to speak about. In this climate of love, there will be no more unplanned, unwanted pregnancies. Unwanted children are the cause of war. This is not logical, yet requires understanding. No matter how much you love them when they come, unwanted children are the cause of war. There is a rigidity in the east. The pillar of the east stands tall to the puddle of the west. The east is sharp like the eagle. The west is soft like bear. Through knowledge comes experience, and experience is the mother of all teachers. In the East, we must take nothing personally. The East teaches us about relationships. And as I said before, relationship is a space in between. It is the polarity. When someone is in the East and being very rigid, it is unwise to meet them in the same place, because now you have rigidity facing rigidity and there is really no relationship. For relationship comes from difference. So it is best to meet them from a different place. So when somebody is in the east, you can choose to take them to meet them from a place in the west. And if someone has said something hurtful to you from the place of the east, you can be in the west and simply say, "Ouch, that hurts." You can sit in the north and listen attentively, clear your mind, and be able to respond. If you find you too just you feel like you are in the east, then you must be able to not take what they're saying personally. You can also choose to sit in the south, maybe be a little bit childish, playful. Relationships develop not from the same, for we are already the same. We are all children of one mother. Relationships develop through the space in between. So consider, what is the best place you could be to meet someone where they are at? This does not mean joining them where they are at. To meet means to relate. So to meet the needs of someone else is to relate to them. We are all one family, family accepts people as is. This does not suggest no conflict. At times, conflict comes to remind you to make space and hence relate. Around 4 p.m. today, the fire is dwindling, and I realize that there are too many grandfathers in it to be maintained. As it turns out, the man who was here, the grandfathers get changed, so 7 come in every 6 hours, and they go back in. But for some reason, he put more grandfathers in the fire, and there are too many in there now to be maintained. There's too much. There's too much of a good thing. So I ask my helpers to remove 12. My energy is low. The womb, the sweat lodge, is damp, and energy has dissipated. Another of the women comes and sings, and I'm grateful. This time between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m., and the 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. are the hardest. I'm awaiting arrival of fresh grandfathers eagerly. When I came into the lodge, I asked for a song. I asked for my own song. And it comes to me in this time. I receive my song, and it is called the Father Calling Home Song. And it goes like this. Way-ah, yah, hey-ah, ho. Way-ah, yah, hey-ah, ho. Way-ah, way-ah, way-ah. Don't Tanka shela wea hea ho. Wea, wea, wea. I begin to tap into all the effort that is going on outside of the lodge, the organizing, people wanting to stay on top of things out there. And I question why, what for. And I understand that it is a sense of comfort and connection, this wanting to keep things organized, staying on top of things. I have a headache now. And the teachings of enough begin to come in. It's a teaching I've received quite a bit of guidance on, and it's in my book as well, An Inkling's Leave, An Inkling's Weave. An inkling is like a pre-thought. It's not really a thought, it's more of a feeling. And I'm feeling enough right now. It's this trust that comes from you knowing when you've had enough. And the same, there was too many grandfathers at one point, and it was enough. So we removed some. And I remember in the practice of S&M, bondage, you really must trust the one you are playing with. And again, it comes from knowing when you've had enough. And there is a safe word that is chosen by each participant and agreed on before commencement. And so in this S&M game, which many of us are playing all the time, sadomasochistic, we have a word, and when we say that word, it is stopped. No conversation about it, no negotiation, just stop as soon as the word is spoken. I certainly notice my own sadomasochistic traits with my partner in our conversation. And for a while we played with this. We had a safe word each. It only lasted like a day. But it was something to play with. Something to play with. Something to meet our rigidity, because we both have rigidity. From that place of the South, the child, something to play with. I definitely feel more irritated, kind of whiny in the East, or I did at first. And then I settled into its efficiency, because in the spirit world, we get things done 6 times faster. The East is very efficient, just like symbiosis. And symbiosis also taught me about enough. When somebody wants help, and we offer it to them, some kind of assistance, it is up to the person who's asked for the help to say, thank you, that is good. I'm good. I've had enough now. Otherwise, it becomes this draw, and you're just in this, you don't know when to stop giving, and they haven't said, okay, I'm good now. And to say I'm good is so powerful, so powerful. Yes, I need help. I need some help now, and now I've had enough help. Thank you. I'm good. That is a teaching from symbiosis. Otherwise, we become a drag, a vampire of energy, and we don't mean to do it. But we're going to deplete the person giving help, and then they're going to start to feel resentful and like, you know, I give, and you just take, take, take. Sound familiar? So, the person who's asking for help, you know, you come to ask for help when you know you've had enough of something, but you also have to keep that enoughness circulating, so you know when you've had enough help as well. So enough, enough, just stop it now. And gently, gently, gently asking for help, and gently saying, thank you, I've had enough, I'm good. In the East, we are apt to close the door on challenging relationships. Spirituality can be an out. You know, I need to go be in a retreat now, I need to get away from you. Spend some time in the East, and so we have to be very careful. As I said, I'm sitting in the door. The door is in the East, and in the East we are apt to close the door on challenging relationships. It's kind of ironic. We think spirituality is so opening and giving, and I don't know, like it's the best place to be, but it's only one of the 4 places, and it, like all of the places on the medicine wheel, must be used appropriately. Not as a way to close doors, and a way to close doors sometimes. Now, this whole thing about doors is very interesting, the doors of perception, and when we're in ceremony, we open the doors to the spirit worlds, and sometimes people forget to close them, but we are coming to the point of no more doors. This will be a chapter in my second book. The title is No More Doors. Because the shamanic tradition that we are all stepping back into, the traditions, merges the physical and the spiritual, the East and the West. It sees no difference between the physical and the spiritual. That is the shamanic path. And so there can be no more doors. Yes, we open the doors to the dead. We open the doors to all the different spirits. We must learn to be responsible with them, and we must learn how to work with them. We cannot work here in conjunction with the spirits of the dead. They live in a different world. Many myths and legends come from Native American teachings that when A husband, for instance, lost his wife, and he grieved and grieved for her, and he prayed and he put tobacco down and asked for her spirit to be returned to him. And the woman, of course, loving her husband, the dead woman, succumbed. And she came back to him, and he took her back into the village. And after that, there was only trouble, and there was suffering for the people. The traditions of the Tibetans teach us about the rites of death and dying, because it is very important to separate those worlds and allow the dead to go on their way and not hold them here, because it brings great trouble to the people. It's 6 a.m. now. I'm still in the east. The grandfathers come in, and it is said that what we see in the grandfathers, even if there's lots of people sitting in the lodge, everybody sees it from a different angle. And so what the grandfathers are showing you in their glowing armor is coming up, is just for you. And for the first time in this sweat, I have been able to see the fire undulating like waves inside the stones. And I can even still see it now. I saw it this last weekend. I was in a sweat and the door was open, it was light, but I could still see that undulating spirit, the undulating spirit that is held inside the grandfathers, and we call that fire. And this morning I see a woman, and it's on a cracked open side of one of the grandfathers. And then I tried to turn the rock to face me more, and it turns itself over, and I see a bear running after a horse. And just below that, all of a sudden, the bear and the horse become a new creature made of the two. So now it's like a heavy but fast creature, hairy, very furry, running. And I'm remembering a Zen Buddhist book I once read called Thinking Without Thoughts, which is possible. Thinking is one of our 11 senses. And as with taste, we understand that, or we have learned, that an apple is sweet. So we bind sweetness to the apple. And in the same way, thinking is bound to thoughts, images, and memories. So the teaching from the West is dropping in now, about ceasing anticipation. Cease anticipation. Every day I anticipate the arrival of the next person who is coming to tend to the fire. And I'm sitting with how much of my life is lived in anticipation rather than participation. Waves are coming into the shore now. My dog, Alau, likes to chase the waves, and she's running back and forth, chasing the waves as they crash on the shore, barking at them. One of her favorite things to do. Again, I'm reminded of the teaching right now. We are creator beings, and to be a creator means to be part of creation. Thoughts can dull or pollute our sense of thinking, just as smoking dulls taste and smell. So cease anticipation comes to me as I sit here towards the end of my time in the East. It is a teaching from the West, because I am looking into the West as I sit in the East. And the west reminds me that as the sun sets, be empty so that you can greet the new day. Drain all the pain of the one day. Allow access to it before you begin another day. We also say that in Qigong and in many practices, you must not make any move unless you are centered. Pain is natural. It accumulates like dirt under your fingernails, like pollen on the feet of the bees. And you must have an outlet or a tool to discharge it. Ceremony and sweat lodge are some of those outlets or tools. It is the nature of the mother, or the earth, I'm not really sure which one, to produce pain, sensation, and to help us bear it. There's a song we sing in ceremony, Huachuma ceremony, comes from the Andes. And it says, it's in Spanish, but it says, no me dejes, madre mía naturaleza. Do not leave me, my mother nature, for if you will, I will die from the pain. Tears of desperation, madre mía naturaleza. Si tú tienes el don de la santa purificación en los manos. It means, yes, you have the power of purification in your hands. Blessings, Mother Nature. Blessings. So Mother Nature is synonymous with pain. It means give life. In the Medicine Wheel song, the Grandmother song, in the place of the North, we say, give life, Mother. Give life, Father. When you know how to manage pain, and you do know now that pain will come, yet not anticipate it, not cowering in fear of its enormous shadow, it's just dirt under your fingernails, and you know how to deal with that. Pain is not such a terrible thing once you understand it. I gaze again into the fire and the stones undulating like water in a pool. And here I am at the beach with the sun reflecting off the water. It is my favorite thing in the world to watch the undulating patterns of light bouncing off the water onto the trees or onto whatever is in its path. It is my favorite thing in the whole world. Seeing fire and water dance together. And the grandfathers are making tinkling sounds in the pit here. When the fire outside is low, I feel weak. That fire is feeding me, as are these grandfathers. They are my lifeline, my sustenance. I am sure that if the fire went out, that I would actually die. I have felt it several times. The fire got very low and I was very, very weak. I may well have died. For this is real. This time we spend in the lodge. It is not romantic. It is real. It is night now and I have a headlamp, so that I can record the visions that come to me in this book. And I'm watching all the particles dancing in the light. When they hit the light a certain way, they become engorged so as to be three-dimensional, and they look like jellyfish to me. And at the same time that I observe them, they seem to quicken their movements. And I realize it is my desire to grasp them, to seize this thing in space and time so I might explore it further, that brings this quickening. I put my finger out towards the particles, and my finger looks huge. And I notice I've got dirt under my fingernail. It is early morning now, and I am thinking, preparing myself to move to the south. I'm just resting. And I understand how shamanism is an interface with the spirit world and with soul navigation, sending things back where they belong, putting all things in right place, so that we may rest. Our ancestors fought to get us here. The rest is up to us. Imagine nothing to kill or die for. And the key word here is for. What are we doing it for? I come back to the question of the unborn, of those waiting to come in, the wanted children, and I am told to go ask the South. I tried to smoke the chinupa this morning, which was so robust and generous in the North. But today in the East, the stem is clogged. Putting the match in the bowl feels like penetration, softly but direct. At 9 a.m., I move to the south. The east, due to the design of the lodge and other factors, felt like a tight squeeze, like the universe itself, which is always expanding because it is so crowded. But the east proved to be my most efficient place thus far, despite having to move my entire bedroll each time the grandfathers arrived. So each time the grandfathers came in, I would have to move everything out of the way of the door to make way for those grandfathers. This morning, the door is open. There's fresh air. I see the sunlight touching the treetops. I feel like combing my hair and brushing my teeth, but I don't. But I do wipe down some spores that are growing on the ribs of the lodge. Housekeeping. Here again, I ask, what keeps me here? I could just walk out that door right now, that door of the lodge, and be done with this. But what is keeping me here? And the word interface comes in large print. And it's the name of a fairly well-known ecological carpet company. The fellow who runs it is a very good speaker on many things and acknowledged as a man of wisdom. The way the carpet company works is that they make them in like almost like tiles, so that if there is a stain on one part of the carpet, you just replace that little chunk instead of throwing the whole thing away. In Hebrew, the word sin means stain, and in Spanish it means without. So here I am, moving through Lent. I came into the lodge on Ash Wednesday. This is known as the time of Lent, preparation for the resurrection, which occurs with Ostara, otherwise known as Easter. I realized through my experiences with a male helper and the female helpers that I have more to give to my sisters than I do to the men, yet it is the men who need it more. I also see my people, the individuals who are helping me, better through how they have been serving me through this fast. Their limitations exposed. And again, this is the importance of selfless service, not only to help, but to be seen as your true self, and to keep tabs on that, to connect with your presence, which is unique. In a motorboat, tabs keep the boat balanced. There are two little things on the left and right side of the boat so that if you have more baggage and people and weight on one side for some reason and you can't balance that out inside the boat, you use the tabs on the outside to keep the hull centered in the water so that the boat can move most efficiently. To right a sailboat is to keep it upright, not turned over, for it would not function well with its keel in the air. When you truly are yourself in service to others, all your imbalances, as well as your gifts, will show up. Your presence is the sound of your breath, your voice, your footsteps. And it is our presence that we give to others. We pray to the element of air to teach us to use our voice with respect and to make beautiful music as medicine. The men need us to nurture them, and in nurturing them, we elevate ourselves back into right place. And it is not a power over. It is just putting things back into right place, as the man in the sweat lodge last weekend explained. Women's place is up here. Men, with his left hand, he said, were down here. And up and down are not, better than, or even more than. It creates the space in which the relationship can happen. We are the same. We are all children of one mother. But it is the space in between in which all our relations happens. What is happening is the key to shamanism. In fact, the word shaman is not a noun, not even an adjective. It means it is happening. Happening. Something can only happen in the space in between. And so though shamanism promotes the merging of the physical and the spiritual, the West and the East, it's not really a merging, it's an emerging of what can come when those two are in right place. When male and female are in right place, we are already the same. We are already the same. And this path between the West and the East is the path of difficulty. But we shall overcome, rather than be overcome. The word itself, overwhelm, isn't really a word, because whelm means to be overcome. So we get over being overwhelmed. Sit in the place of the north when you need to rest, before you come to the east. Nurture yourself, nourish yourself with all of the directions, so that when you say, all my relations, you really understand what that is. There's a story that is portrayed. The vision of this story has been manifested through a beautiful carving by Bill Reed. It's called, the Jade Egg as well, and it's in the Vancouver International Airport. And the story that goes with it is this. As Raven flew over the beach, something bright caught his eye. And upon landing, he found under his feet, half buried in the sand, a giant clamshell. Upon looking even closer still, he could see that this giant clamshell was filled with tiny creatures, cowering in terror of his enormous shadow. Well, here was something to break up the mundane nature of his day. But nothing was going to happen so long as these creatures stayed inside their shell. And they certainly weren't going to come out in their current terrified state. So Raven lowered his great head, and with his smooth trickster's tongue that had gotten him into and out of so many misadventures during his troubled and troublesome existence, he coaxed and cajoled the tiny creatures to come out and play in his shiny new world. Aho metakuyasin, all my relations.